Greetings and salutations. Welcome to the Barely Superman podcast, a conversational podcast where I talk to you about things that matter to me today. It's been a year, a whole year. This is officially a yearly podcast. Well, hopefully that won't be the trend for going forward. I mean, it's been a while. I did record episode 2 a while back. It was almost 11 months ago. But the audio file was not... it was broken. It was glitchy and parts of the audio was missing. And I couldn't go forward with that. And the motivation to redo that episode kind of died off and I didn't end up doing it. However, after a year, I got a chance to actually look at what I wanted from this podcast and really evaluate what I needed to do. And creating a format was interesting, trying to kind of cylindrify and contain everything into one easily palatable podcast. What I ended up with was trying to actually talk about things that really dig deep for me, things that are interesting at the time, so that I can continue to create content and from that I can do a better job at doing this. So this week, this month, or this year's podcast is actually going to center around Star Wars. Now, there are people in this universe that don't know what Star Wars is, and there are people that confuse Star Wars with Star Trek. Let me put it this way. Star Trek is the science of space, and Star Wars is the faith of space, and I'll come back to that in a second. So, what is Star Wars, and what does it mean to me? Everyone who most people that watch or have watched Star Wars watched it when they were really young, and it's really more of a rite of passage. Your mom and dad, or mom or dad, or two dads, or two moms, or whatever configuration you do have. So yeah, whatever configuration you have, it's usually a rite of passage. Star Wars came out in 1988, if I remember correctly. And from then, it's just been a phenomenon. The rite of passage, as I was trying to explain earlier, was your parents watched Star Wars when they were young or younger. And Star Wars was so big back then. And it went away for 10 years and then came back in 1999 or 7. Anyway, it came back. It came back with force, and your parents wanted you to experience the same thing they experienced as kids. It's what we see when we see with Lego. Lego is the same thing. It's gone through the same cycle. So your parents really loved this one thing, and they want to pass it down to you. And the movies are set up in such a way that every 10 years or so, there's a trilogy, or that's the trend at the moment. That's the pattern. So for me, Star Wars wasn't a rite of passage. It wasn't something that I was given to by my parents. For me, that was Star Trek. For me, Star Wars was something that came out, and everyone was talking about it. And I was the young lad who went with my cousins, and we were like, we'll check this Star Wars thing out, right? Now, me being this super nerd, I really love space, everything about space. I even dreamt of actually colonizing Mars one day. Not just going to space, I wanted to colonize Mars, have my own sort of country in Mars, have one of the first Martians, children born on Mars, that is. Those dreams are far gone, by the way. I have no intention of having children or going to Mars. Desolate planet. Anyway, so... Star Wars. I went with my cousin and... Well, my two cousins, Mustafa and Naim. And it was a religious experience, to say the least. We went there and... the blaring of the horns when it opens that opening note that you always hear when you watch a Star Wars film, and the text flying by into the depths of space, and you could sense that there was going to be something special about this franchise, something unique that no other franchise actually has. And that was what Star Wars was for me. And when I watched the first Star Wars, I was so enamored with the characters and the universe and the lore that I wanted to know everything about it. I wanted to delve deeper into Star Wars. But back then, the libraries that I had had limited resources. The internet wasn't what the internet is now, so I read a few books here and there, but I never got a chance to really dive into the expanded universe. And after that, after watching the first movie, we watched the second one when it came out, and we were so excited, because when I was younger, little things that affect you as you're older don't really play a part. For example, Jar Jar Binks, and I will come back to Jar Jar Binks. There were things that were so special about Star Wars, but as a young person, you never really thought about plot and story and how characters develop and the character dynamics, the relationships between characters. So the first movie was, for me, a great film when I was younger. It's still an okay film. After being a grown up, well, I'm still a kid really at heart, but you know, say so, whatever will be. But Star Wars was this magical experience, and when I watched the second and third film, I knew that this was a series that I was gonna love for the rest of my life. And I watched episode 1, 2, and 3. Well, sorry, episodes 4, 5, 6. It goes chronologically. 1, 2, 3 are the prequels. 4, 5, 6 are the older movies. So I watched 4, 5, 6, and after watching them, I realized how much Star Wars was the original Star Wars. I never understood until that point why everyone was so fixated in having the old essence of Star Wars back and how the prequels ruined Star Wars. But after watching 4, 5, 6, I was like, I understand why people would hate the newer movies so much. And then a few years went by and I watched the movies again, and I realized that my image of Star Wars, the prequels, was slowly diminishing as every scene was just breaking my perfect envision of what those movies were, and it broke my heart. So it's actually really interesting. And then I watched them all again last year, 2015, and it dawned on me that the original movies were so great, but the prequels were not. And although there's, as standalone movies and movies that are not in the Star Wars universe, they might be considered good, but as Star Wars movies, they were completely lackluster. And that's why Star Wars is powerful, because it's generational. And there's a generation of kids who never saw 4, 5, 6. There's a generation of kids that have not seen the first 6 movies. And when I've watched episode 7 4 times now, and I will talk about episode 7 in a more spoiler casty kind of way, but the thing about everything that I've absorbed about episode 7 and why Star Wars is so powerful is, let me give you the example of when I watched it for the third time. And the third time I watched it really, really early. I wanted to go to just, I'd soaked it all in, and I just wanted to find out more information about questions I had, and I thought maybe another viewing would change or add information that I wasn't privy to. Privy to? I think that's the word. Privy? Privy? Privy to? Who knows? English is a very complex language. It's not my first language, so you know, you gotta live with it. Anyway, so I was in the cinema, and there was it was myself and a few others. But what really caught my eye was this about 10-year-old boy. He was like eight to 10 years old, and he was sitting with his mum, and this was the first time the mum was watching the movie. And for the kid, that was also the first time they were watching a Star Wars movie. It was evident they didn't know anything about the universe or the characters. And immediately the movie started, you could see the kid just changing from... He was really, like, at the beginning, he was, like, not really into it. It was just something that his mom wanted to do that day. And then the famous opening key for Star Wars blared open, and you could just... His face changed. His emotions changed. He was so focused. He was looking at the screen. He was like, you know, he was engaging with the film. And then as the film went on, you could see the character development and the characters interacting with each other kind of affected the way the kid was. So his mood changed when Rey and Finn first got together. He got saddened when Poe was in the... TIE fighter and it crashed and it blew up. He was amused by BB-8. And what was really, really special just by watching the interaction between the mother and child was the kid had questions and the mom always just like had an answer for it. Like he would be like, who's this? She'd be like, this is that. What's the purpose? Usually that is really, I really hate when people talk in cinemas, but that interaction was just like, it was so beautiful because you could see everyone around except the people right at the front had watched the film, and people at the back were just, they were not only fixated with this interaction between mother and child, but it was the way the movie was affecting the kid. It was like every Disney movie, every Pixar movie, well, that I've seen anyway, it has this kind of magical Disney touch to it, which is why Disney and Star Wars are the perfect mix, perfect mishmash, perfect combination of things to put together. And it was just so touching, especially, and I'm going to go into spoiler here, with the scenes that happen towards the end. I'm gonna put it as a vague statement, and then I'll give you a warning if you haven't seen Star Wars when the spoiler cast section happens, which will be towards the end. So yeah, so the things happen towards the end of the film, and you could see the mum, she was just crying, she was like, she was bawling it down, and the kid could feel like the emotion coming from his mum, and it was just like, He could feel that was a sad moment. He understood that the death of this character was important. But to him, because he didn't have the legacy that his mother had, he didn't fully grasp what had just happened. For him, it was just a cool character that had died. But for his mom, it was kind of like letting go of your childhood, which is what Star Wars has always done. And... which is why Star Wars is so, so powerful. And may the Force be with you. Now, with every Star Wars conversation, in terms of movies, there's always, always the conversation of which one do you like best. And it's at this point where I will talk about my rankings for Star Wars. And yes, I will offend some of you. And yes, I will say shit that will make you crazy. But truth be told, I don't care. Because these are my rankings. Anyway, I'm going to go from bottom to top. And I'm basing it from the chronological order. So episode 1 being the first episode of the prequels. And episode 6 being the last episode of the originals. That's how I'm doing it. And, as a matter of fact, time to get into it. Time to talk about my rankings. Here we go. So, number 7. So number seven is, you guessed it, Star Wars Episode 2. Now, I might come as a shock to some people. Star Wars Episode 2 is largely seen as the second best of the prequels, but I am here to tell you that that movie is by far the worst of all of the Star Wars movies. Now, I understand that every Star Wars movie, I mean, hardcore fans, 9 out of 10 times, you'll when you talk to a Star Wars fan, this movie is number, number, what, 6 in the lineup, if you're counting 1 to 7. But I don't agree with that standing. Usually, the middle film stands as a bridge between the first movie and the third movie. But with this movie, nothing of significance ever happens. Now I can hear some nerds like shouting, "Oh, but Anakin's mom dies." That's fully summarized in the third episode. It's summarized in 10 minutes. That's nothing important. "Oh, but they were the clones." Those things were not, it was not relevant. It was not defined whose side the clones were fighting for. Everything was confusing. And because this movie was just grounded on the fact that everything was a light show. There were thousands of lightsabers and thousands of blasters being shot in every way, shape, and form. And then there was just stupidity about like how things were handled. Like the example I always try to put forward is Obi-Wan was searching for a bounty hunter and stumbled upon this unknown galaxy or not unknown planet. It's been hidden from the file system. This is where he discovers the clones, and in every movie they kind of take care when you're doing kind of secret espionage. But Obi-Wan comes in, he gets his intel, he accuses this person who he doesn't know and cannot even suspect as being the bounty hunter, and then what he does is right after he's gathered all the information, he goes outside in the blistering rain, where he would have to shout everything that he's discovered. And he sends this video message to, or video call to, the Jedi Council. And he's shouting everything he's discovered right outside where they can hear him. And I'm like, what is happening? And also, the scene that follows after that is you have Jango Fett in full suit, which is the most incriminating thing you can do. It's kind of like wearing the clothes that you had in a crime scene. There was no need, but like that was all done. It's all a setup for fan service, and that movie was exactly that. It was fan service. There was nothing of substance. There was no plot development. There was no story development. Padme may have married Anakin in the end of this film, but that was fully summarized at the beginning of the next film, the episode 3. So this movie served no purpose. The plot was basic. The fighting was bland. The story was atrocious. The acting from Ewan McGregor was fantastic, and Natalie Portman and Mace Windu as Samuel Jackson. And let's go back to Yoda. This movie is where they started to ruin Yoda. Yoda in the original films may have spoken backwards, and the story behind that is if he spoke normally, if he spoke forward, his words of wisdom wouldn't sound that special. So what they did was George Lucas kind of reversed the way he spoke, so it kind of sounds like it's fresh wisdom that you've never heard before. That's really why Yoda speaks the way he speaks. Anyway, in this film, they took his form of speech, and they kind of made it really, really, they just, like, all right, for example, in the older films, he would say something, my laptop just went down, all right, there we go, in the older films, he would say something, and it would be backwards, but you could kind of get the gist of what he's saying. It's very easily understood. But in the prequels, like, they took his reverse speak and really reversed it in a way that it didn't make sense for the most part. You just had to extrapolate bits and pieces and then try to put it together, and it was really frustrating to try to even understand what Yoda was saying. And it's one of the few things about this movie that really ruined Star Wars as it was from the original. I mean, people that didn't watch the originals wouldn't care, but that's where it really started to go down. And that's my biggest issue with episode 2. And Star Wars, the thing about Star Wars is Star Wars has always been a human story, but in space. And by that I mean it's always centered around people and emotions, but the second movie didn't have that. Second movie was just filled to the brim with aliens and alien technology, and it didn't have a grounded story. In fact, none of the prequels really had a solidified plot point or story or narrative, and they weren't really human stories. Actually, the first and third movies were more human interaction, human stories than the second movie, but we always just put that aside. With the second movie, there was no center focus. Well, unlike the first and third movie, i.e. episode 1 and episode 3, those don't really have a centered focus either, but it's much worse in the second movie. Which brings me back to my rankings. This is why it's at the bottom. It doesn't embody anything that Star Wars is. And because of that, and because of the just everything that it's not, it has to be my least favorite. It's my number 7. Number 6. So number 6 is an interesting one. My number 6 is actually episode 1. Now episode 1 does have its problems. For every good scene, there are 3 bad scenes. And you can say, well, if that's your logic, then why is that not your last movie? My number 6 and number 7 are not that far away. It's just because number 6 actually has a plot. It has an interesting plot, but it's ruined by bad CGI and Jar Jar Binks. Now, when I was younger, Jar Jar Binks was fine. I didn't find him all too annoying. He was annoying, but he was annoying not in the way that he is annoying now. And I like to liken it to Teletubbies. He's the Star Wars' Teletubby, because he's not something that is there for any advancement of anything except for, you know, the unifying of the country. But Jar Jar Binks was the one thing of Star Wars, the one Star Wars creation that I really despise. You can't have that. Because for episode 1, he played no significant role up until the very end. And the problem with that is he remained in all 3 of the prequel movies, and his position as a reputable member of the council only increased as time went on. And I cannot stand that creature. He is a Teletubby, and another thing that this episode ruined for most people was the objectification of the Force. Now, that is a very interesting term to throw around. The Force has always been this spiritual entity. The Force is like religion. It is a religion. Being a Jedi is a religion. You just know that the Force is around you. You can feel it. You can sense it. You move through it. You let it guide you. It's this supernatural entity. This all powerful being of sorts that dictates how events will transpire. And the evidence of this happening with the Force is all around in every movie, like how Han met Leia and how Leia met Luke, how Anakin met Padme. All of this is dictated by the Force. However, the way that they try to kind of quantify the Force in trying to make it more scientific, in trying to make it more evident that Anakin was indeed the chosen one, was to trying to give an empirical measurement to the Force. And they used midichlorians to do this. And midichlorians, as if they were implemented better in the movies, could have been a great thing. Midichlorians being these sort of bacteria, these life cells, these life entities that live within every living being, and essentially they communicate with each other in order to bring about the Force. But the problem with that is, then how do you explain moving inanimate objects with the Force, or anything that's kind of the supernatural nature of the Force, and like producing lightning and all of the Force ability, not all of them, anything that is like to do with the mind and Jedi mind tricks can be explained by midichlorians scientifically, but everything else can't be. And the thing about that was, by reducing this faith into a science, trying to really reduce a religion to essentially microbes, it ruins the kind of allure and fantasy of Star Wars, because you're essentially saying only those with a genetic predisposition can be people that are influenced and can influence the Force. And that isn't really the nature and the story and the fantasy that is Star Wars. And that is why people hate this movie more than they do Episode 2. I don't mind the science. I don't mind the politics. However, it was just implemented badly. And with this, I have to say that this movie does at least center around a few characters. It doesn't have a central theme, a central character, a central narrative, but it does focus on specific characters. This is a story about Padme and her people. This is a story about Qui-Gon and his defiance with the Council, finding this chosen one. This is a story about Obi-Wan seeing his master defy the Council and growing up to be that person, because he saw that the Council was essentially corrupt. And this is actually the first instance of where, after watching it recently, I realized that the Jedi were not the good people. The Jedi were not. There are no good people in Star Wars. Even though it's designed in such a way that you use colors to kind of emote being good or bad, as in red is bad and blue is good, but I actually found out that within my research that the Jedi are full of contradictions. They are pacifists that use swords or lightsabers stolen from Sith technology. And everything that they did for advancement in the Jedi, and everything that they do in the original movies, because that's the only instance where the Jedi kind of exist as a council. They only did it for the rise of power. They sit in comfortable seats and they live comfortable lives, and they will do anything to maintain that, even if that means leasing themselves out to a government as soldiers and weapons of war. It's very interesting when you actually start to delve into what Star Wars is and like who is the bad person in Star Wars. Because when you look at it, apart from the child killing, Anakin did aspire to bring peace to the galaxy, even though that peace meant being under a regime that is constructed by himself and Senator Palpatine. And what this movie did was it kind of established all the different pillars of the Council, the Jedi, and the aspiring rebellion. And what I loved most about this movie was it took a story that was very complex and very, dare I say it, convoluted, but it tried to mishmash these very difficult concepts and kind of present it in a child-friendly way. And even though most of that was lost, after watching this movie multiple times, you can start to see where they were trying to, what exactly they were trying to do. And for that reason, that is why this movie is not my number six. And let's not even downplay the
amazing
character that is Darth Maul. Darth Maul is just a beast. He is just the best thing that in the Star Wars universe. I mean, Darth Vader, he's pretty cool. Kylo Ren, he's my boy. But Darth Maul was, he barely said anything, but he conveyed everything with such grace. And I always liken it to the scene where Darth Maul has finally seen Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon Jinn, and they are in an intergalactic face-off, and you can tell that everyone had a soul in this movie. Qui-Gon was the calm and collected, always thinking about the next move type of character. Darth Maul was a Sith Lord, and he was just full of rage. He was always angry, always just antsy to do the next. He was always just moving forward. And then you had Obi-Wan, who was patient, but impatient at the same time. You could tell that his training wasn't exactly complete. He was still not the calm and centered embodiment of the Jedi that Qui-Gon was. And Qui-Gon was really the only thing about Star Wars, the prequel movies, that was reminiscent to what a Jedi could be. And you can see this this kind of Obi-Wan, the original Obi-Wan in the original movies. Qui-Gon embodies everything that Obi-Wan was or is. And you can argue that this movie is kind of a catalyst of how Obi-Wan will become in the future in terms of the original movies. And whew, Darth Maul, come on now. Darth Maul is just the best thing to ever happen in Star Wars, and especially those double lightsabers. That double lightsabers, because I hadn't even watched the trailer for Star Wars, and when I saw the two swords, oh my god, damn, it was so good. Anyway, moving on to the next movie in my ranking. Now, this has been difficult. I'm not gonna lie, getting to this point has actually been really difficult. It was a very tough decision on which movie came next. However, after much deliberation, the next movie, aka number five, is, drumroll please, the number five movie, and even now I'm still debating, but number five is episode six. Yes, episode six, one of the prequel movies. Now, this movie is so good. Oh god, I love this movie. But it has things that I really hate. You can tell that this movie was like the catalyst for episode one, because. Okay, let's dive into this. So five is, what's it called? Return of the Jedi. Yes, yeah, that's the name of the movie, I think, yeah. Episode 6, Return of the Jedi, and Return of the Jedi starts off amazingly, right? Luke has now finally finished his training. He's going to Jabba's palace, and he's dressed up in black. And this film kind of foreshadowed, like, I read about the history about this film, and the way it should have ended was changed because of how of a pop icon and pop culture item this movie became. But you could see that the effects of Luke prematurely going to face his father in the previous movie really, really did change him as a character, because he comes in dressed in black and he goes to Jabba's palace and he threatens Jabba, which is something not what the Jedi do. They do not go out and threaten their enemies. They try to find a non-confrontational way of handling everything. And you can see that everything about him has changed. His lightsaber is no longer blue, it's green. He embodies a lot of like what Vader would have on his walk to the dark side. And you can start to see that he is becoming everything that his father was. And for that aspect, I thought that if that story panned out in the way that it originally did, as in Luke being the next Vader, like being the next evil tyrant, succumbing to the dark side after killing the emperor and his father, and also having Leia as actually a more prominent Jedi, so it would have been a struggle between daughter and son. Now, that kind of yin and yang kind of thing would have been amazing to just experience. But what we had instead was the classic George Lucas kind of, because everyone wanted to feel, because this was the last movie, everyone wanted to feel good after the movie. They wanted to feel like everything had ended. Because George Lucas didn't really intend this to be like he did have intentions of having this movie and franchise expanded upon. However, at the time, it wasn't like it was the immediate plan to make an episode what is now 7. He wanted to make sure that when people left the movie, they felt good about watching Star Wars. And that's why Luke was able to defeat Vader and not succumb to the dark side, even though everything he did in this movie was reminiscent of something that a Sith Lord or someone who's succumbed to the dark side would do, because he struck Palpatine first, the Emperor, after being tormented by the idea of his friends being bait, only for him to turn to the dark side. Everything that Luke did was not Jedi-like, and that's why this movie is really, really great for me. However, the other side of that is the Ewoks. Now, everything about the Ewoks, I do not like. I do not like the idea of an entire army that is trained, military trained, to be able to stand on par with the likes of the Jedi, are destroyed and defeated by a group of 3-foot-tall teddy bears. That, to me, that idea, that it's a ridiculous notion. And the fact that they were using such primitive tools, spears and logs, even though people argue guerrilla warfare, but you cannot destroy something that can't be hacked away or by a lightsaber or destroyed by a missile to be destroyed by a log. That does not make sense to me in any way, shape or form. You can even put into consideration that gravity on this planet is actually much, much, much stronger. And you can even argue that because of their little compact bodies, that they could travel in more efficient hiding ways. But nothing about the Ewoks is adorable to me. I don't like how they look. They are creepy. I do not like how they talk. They are annoying. And I do not like the fact that the movie was so good, but it was centered around these stupid creatures, these stupid, adorable, that people love creatures, that I do not like this movie. Not only that, but everything that was built up was kind of destroyed in like moments. The beginning of this movie was just fantastic. It was great. The build up to like being in the sand dune with that thing that kind of absorbs you for 1,000 years, and like Luke's plan and everything, that was great. I mean, that was great. And then Boba Fett is killed in the dumbest way possible. It's so stupid, and he has a jetpack, and he couldn't save himself. This movie infuriates me in like the worst way possible. But you know, that is what it is. It is what it is. So that's why this movie is. Everything that was good was great, but everything that was not good was horrible to me. And I've watched this movie 3 times in the span of 8 weeks, and the more I watch it, the more I'm like, yeah, nah, I can't rock with this. Which brings it back to the rankings, and we are number 4. And number 4 is the special one. Number 4 for me is, I'm proud to say, is Episode 3. This is the only movie in the prequels that I really, really actually enjoy. They fixed a lot of the things. They brought it back to a more human story. And they kind of summarized everything that happens between Episode 1 and 2 really quickly. And they remove everything that I've always hated about the prequel movies. And they still brought back a little bit of fan service, but the reason why this isn't higher up is because it still has the kind of prequel tendencies. So the opening act is Anakin and Obi-Wan, and Anakin straight up murders Count Dooku. He straight up murders, 2 lightsabers, slit his head off. That is bad. That is so boss. And the film continues, at the beginning of this film continues at that pace. Everything seems like important. Everything seems like time is of relevance. And then it slows down towards the middle, and the rest is history, I guess. I mean, everything with Lord Grievous and his spinning lightsabers, which are pretty goddamn useless, and how Lord Grievous kind of dies super quickly. But they kind of fixed up the droids, and they fixed up the clones as well. The clones were more human, I guess, in this movie. So it's actually pretty good. It's pretty good that they did this. It's pretty good that they took something that Star Wars people loved, and then they kind of just blended it into like this kind of much more entertaining package for Star Wars. But the thing about this movie that stands out the most is the last scene on Mustafar. On the Mustafar system is when this movie kind of shines. And I have watched the developer and the behind the scenes footage of everything. And the reason why this part of the movie feels so different was it was ghost directed by Steven Spielberg. And you can tell that this wasn't really the usual, George Lucas bullshit. I mean, it's very interesting. It's very interesting that it pans out the way it does, because when you look back into Star Wars, Steven Spielberg, the way he kind of does movies, it always has a certain flair to it. And with this movie, you could tell that in the Mustafar system, that everything about the lava and like the way the characters interact with each other in the leading to the ending of the movie, everything felt like it was necessary. And that's why those final moments of this movie just make this a phenomenal thing to watch, a must see for any Star Wars fan or non-Star Wars fan alike. And yeah, this movie is just that Steven Spielberg ghost. I mean, I'm so glad he did it, and I'm so glad those two are friends, because of that we got the most epic of Jedi battles and like drama and everything put together. Just that final scene, if you gave me that and told me that was Star Wars and told me to buy a full ticket price for it, I would hands down buy the ticket, because that's how good those scenes are. Enough said, I guess. I just better move on to the next one. So, coming at number 3. We're in the top 3 now. I was about to say 4, but we're in the top 3. Number 3 is episode 4. That's a high one to beat there. Episode 4. Oh, some people are expecting episode 7 to be here. Or episode 6. Oh, 6 is... Wait, which one's it? Episode 5. So, episode 4 is A New Hope. And A New Hope is one of the best movies ever. It's that good. You just have to watch it. If you have not watched it, you just have to watch it. It's that good. Because this was where kind of Star Wars was made and was born. And the story and the characters are so fluid. The character development is so perfect that it's really hard to fault this movie. But the movie in itself has been succeeded by episode 7. And although episode 4, A New Hope, is a great movie, there are just a few things about the movie where you're like, that could have been better. But the way the characters are introduced in this film is just spot on. How Luke is introduced as this kind of guy who wants to help out the rebels, and how everything comes to full circle by him actually joining the rebels. And then there were some deleted scenes, and there was some story plot that I kind of missed when I first watched it, until I kind of watched it a few times. But all of Luke's friends, and Dagobah, they all went to join the rebellion, and Luke was the last one left, and he was tied down by Uncle Owen, and he really wanted to join the fight in any way that he could. And through events from the Empire, he was forced into a situation where he joined the rebels, but everything that he was expecting, everything that he dreamt of it being, was completely turned upside down, and his perspective on the universe was completely changed. And that's why this story is kind of really unique, because you go through that journey with him. And if you've never watched this movie and it's the first time you're watching it, you kind of feel that there's a sense of helplessness, because Vader is this all-powerful being and nothing can touch him, until Luke finds out that he is also a Jedi. He can be a Jedi. He will be trained to be a Jedi, but he's still nowhere near on defeating the Grand Master that is Vader. And the thing I love about this film, and I'm talking about the original version of this film, I'm not talking about the George Lucas version that was released years later, they did this thing that good video games do, good video games, good books, and good movies, is when you know it's going to be a long series, or it's gonna be something that you need to create fear. So you essentially create this character, and you speak about the character, but you never show the character. And in this instance, you had Jabba the Hutt and the Emperor. And you always hear about the Emperor. You always hear about how he is Vader's master. And you think to yourself, if Vader's this badass, he has someone pulling the strings. Like, how terrifying is that? When you know that someone who's completely and utterly terrifying, who is essentially the devil himself, to learn that the devil has a boss that he fears, that is actually spot on. And then Jabba the Hutt is the same way. When they introduce Han, Jabba the Hutt is this essentially mafia boss that kind of runs the underworld of the galaxy, and he is like kind of identified, and you can see that this badass, this guy, Han Solo, the guy who shoots first, is utterly and he's utterly terrified of Jabba the Hutt, and you don't see him in the original movies. And this kind of sense of anticipation and fear is so enamoring. It's so fantastic that you can't not fault this movie. But again, there are things, certain things that you can just tweak. But this movie, by far, by and none, is just one of the movies that you have to watch before you die. It's that good. Watch it. And then bringing us back to number two. And number two for me has to be episode 8. Episode 7? That's the one. Episode 7 is number two. And episode 7 could be argued beat for beat is A New Hope, which is episode 4. However, episode 7 is, even though it can be compared to the poetry that is episode, the original prequels, which, actually, that's another thing about Star Wars. Star Wars is poetry. Everything kind of mimics and is a poetic verse to a greater song that is Star Wars. The poetry kind of reflects the movies that have come before it. So 4, 5, 6, the poetry is matched kind of beat for beat in reverse order with 1, 2, 3. And then 7, and I'm assuming 8 and 9 will be poetry to 4, 5, 6, 3, 2, 1. And then it'll be 7, 8, 9, which matches the original trilogy. Hopefully, we'll see. But yeah, everyone compares this film to A New Hope. And I can see where the comparisons will come, because in terms of how the characters, the purpose that the characters serve is kind of, you can liken it to the characters in episode 4, A New Hope. However, the thing is, the thing about this movie is the segregation of duties is so much better than in the original movies. In the original movie, Luke was everything. He was a fighter pilot. He essentially did everything. He was that movie's Superman, that universe's Superman. Luke was starting to become an all-powerful being, and that's really hard to relate to. A human that doesn't have any faults is really hard to relate to, because that is the purpose of being human. We are faulty creatures. We are defective. We're never perfect. We seek perfection in imperfection. And that's why episode 4 becomes my third on the list, because Luke started becoming this all-powerful creature, and there was no real segregation of duty. And as much as I love the character dynamics between the main characters, it's not as powerful as it is in episode 7, with the combination of Finn and Rey, the combination and Rey and Han, the combination of Rey, Han, and Chewie and Rey, and Poe and Finn, BBA and Poe, and Poe and Rey, and it's the characters have a much more grounded approach to having them as characters. And also, when you actually sit back and really think about it, it's actually a much funnier movie than all of the Star Wars films really put together. But, you know, the reason why it's not at the top of the list is because as much as it felt kind of new as a new Star Wars, it felt like it revitalized the series. It also felt like it's something I've experienced before, which is why it's not at the top of my list. Which brings us to the top of the list, and due to process of elimination, the top of the list is Empire Strikes Back. That movie cannot be touched. That movie is just fantastic, beginning to end, from how it starts to how it ends. Obviously, beginning to end, that's a tautology. The reason why this movie to me is just, it's just cream of the crop, is the way that this story is told. So the movie continues off of the first movie, which is episode 4, and usually middle movies are usually the worst of the films, because they are only there to exist to produce a bridge between two movies. However, this movie can the episode 4 and episode 6 cannot really work without this movie. Even it's that great of a bridge episode, and when you really look at it, it's a story about Luke and Luke's transformation and the conflict that Luke is facing. Even though there's side stories with Han and Leia, their relationship kind of taking a turn, like developing into a more romantic relationship. Luke's story is all about his greatest fears, and it starts off with him after facing off Vader in the previous movie. You can like, usually when you have a movie where you've faced off the main villain, there's always a sense of kind of celebration, but not in this film. This film starts off like, even though they had this massive win against the Emperor and destroying the Death Star, they still were in hiding, which kind of gave you an idea of how powerful Vader really was and how powerful the Empire really is. And it's actually a really good contrast to the first movie, where the first movie is really happy. It's really happy-go-lucky, even though Chewbacca didn't get a medal. That's full-on racism. And also, there were no other races apart from Caucasian in that movie. I'm just putting that out there. In the first movie, not the previous movies. Anyway, so what episode 4 was? Episode 4 was, like, centered around aliens, right? It was all about, like, how the aliens, like Luke was living in an alien world, right? In an alien galaxy, in an alien universe. However, 2 brought it back to episode 5, good lord. Empire Strikes Back brought it really back down to a human level, where there weren't that many aliens in this movie. However, the stories were just, they were just Nolanized. And it went from Luke being in a very desperate situation to seeking hope it's not Dagobah. I said Dagobah earlier. Dagobah is where Luke goes to train. Where's, Tatooine. Oh, Luke's from Tatooine. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, he goes to Dagobah, and he meets Yoda, and Yoda is just like he is what a Jedi should be. He's a pacifist, but he believes in kind of focus and meditation and patience, like a good Jedi should. Like, he's all about taking sacrifices for a better end game, because Luke kind of chose to defy the Jedi training and went in early to fight Vader, you can see remnants of him starting to go to the dark side. As well as that, you can see that because he didn't complete his training, and because of his actions in this movie, a lot more people died in the next movie, which is, this movie is just, it's just top notch. It's the best one out of all of them. It's my favorite one, clearly by the rankings. And that's it. I mean, I can talk for another hour about Star Wars movies and how they've affected me. However, let's go back into episode 7, the newest Star Wars. Now, I love this movie. Oh god, I can't express how much I love this movie. It's really funny. It's really good. It was my film of the year last year. I'll probably do another podcast about the films I watched last year, but podcast episode, right? But this film was so good. It was so good. But it did leave me with a few questions that I'm hoping either episode 8 or 9 will answer. Now, I've already talked about the cast chemistry and how much I love that. Oh god, I love Ray. Oh, Ray's bae. I also love, oh my god, I love FN2187. Oh, Finn. Oh, that guy's my dude. He's my dude. And first of all, Black Stormtrooper? Black Stormtrooper wielding a saber? You know what that means? Like, brothers can now cosplay. I actually have something to cosplay as. And he's not one of those, like, black titans that, like, Idris Elba and such are, where they're, like, 6 foot 18 or whatever. 6 foot 18, 6 foot, like, 7 or whatever. No, he's a reasonably sized human being, which is actually 5'7", which is my height, I'm just saying. Or is he 5'8"? Could be 5'8". I'm 5'7". You know, I can add a little bit of inch on the boot side. I can actually cosplay as a stormtrooper and not feel like I'm doing some sort of gender swap or, like, kind of race swap of a character, like, interpreting a different character. Because, like, it's something I can identify with, which is amazing for me. I mean, this is great. This is a monumental feat. And, oh, man, even if he wasn't black, if he was any other race, FN2187, portrayed by John Boyega, is just the best. His acting is so on point. Or the French like to say, en point. It's en point. It's great. I love it. And it's fantastic. I really, 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 really like it. And the plot was amazing. And, oh, let's have a moment. Now, this is now the spoiler cast. We're going deep into spoilers. So if you really do not want spoilers, I'm probably going to put a time code on where you can continue on. It should be in the description of your podcast service. I'll try to put a description in. But let's talk about how the scene that everyone wants to talk about just happened. And that's the Kylo Ren and his father,
Han Solo.
That scene was perfect, because Han didn't even, like, creep up on Kylo. He just shouted his name and it reverberated around the auditorium. And I love how just, like, movie magic perfect it was. Like, there was just randomly some abyss, like some empty, like a never ending abyss just below where they were talking. And the thing about that scene was it was so emotionally rich, where you could see that Kylo was conflicted. And then to add to this, JJ added, like, his special lighting techniques. So half of his face was red due to the lights from the landing pad sort of thing on the left hand side, and his the other side of his face was blue because of the hangar door was open, and the light from the outside, the moon's light, was kind of reflecting on his face. So you could see that through lighting, his lighting conveyed what was happening even before everything transpired as it did. And, like, that kind of, like, blending of red and blue, that, like, that good and bad, that Sith or Knights of Ren, which I will come to, and Jedi, that kind of good versus bad kind of force, that religiousness of the force kind of came in, shining through, and it was so great. And I when the hangar doors closed, and then his entire face and body was shining red, and you knew at that moment that he had chosen to go to the dark side, and then he just opens his lightsaber, you just hear it, and it pierces through Han's heart, and you're like, god damn, yes. That movie, that scene, that everything about that scene was perfect. It was perfect. Oh man, I'm just geeking out about it, just thinking back. Such a good scene. Such a good scene. It's the best. And then it's just, like, reaction from Wookiee, the Wookiee what's his name, Chewbacca, and then just seeing Rey and Finn just stand there heartbroken, not able to do anything about it. And then, like, Kylo kind of takes a shot to the side and still decides to go against Rey and Finn. And he properly destroys Finn, even though he's heavily wounded. And then this is where the argument about, like, Rey comes in. Like, it's a fucking lightsaber, right? It's a sword that is light. There's not much to it. She is already combat ready. She knows how to wield a weapon. She's been surviving for pretty much all her life by herself. Like, why wouldn't she be able to defeat a wounded Kylo Ren? I do not get that. I do not ever get that argument. It's the dumbest argument ever. And it's clearly obvious that at one point she was Jedi trained, because she wouldn't know about all of, like, the Millennium Falcon and, like, the... Oh, I'm just getting angry. I'm just, like, she wouldn't know anything about the Jedi or the Millennium Falcon and the details that she does if she wasn't already privy to... It's privy. I think it's privy. Privy to, like, the finer details of the Jedi, which everyone believes are a myth. Even in the original movies, like, no one really knew about the Jedi. Well, and if they did, they didn't believe in it. Han didn't believe in it. People that worked with Vader in the conference room never believed it. I mean, like, they always thought of it as an antiquated religion, an antique of times gone by. So for her to have this in-depth knowledge of the Force and how to use it, clearly she has some Jedi heritage. And which brings us back to, like you know, episode to come forward. The great thing about this movie was it left me with questions. Whenever a movie leaves me with questions, I'm like, hell yeah. Especially if it's a movie that obviously has more movies tied to it. The more questions, the better. Because then I can be like, for a year or two, I can just start to kind of create theories and kind of argue with myself, yourself, people on the internet on, like, what to expect next, or just these fan theories. And the movie did leave me with a few questions. A few questions being, who are the Knights of Ren? I saw the Knights of Ren in that flashback, and it was clear that Kylo wasn't the only one. Kylo Ren is one of the Knights of Ren. And there was a few of those Knights of Ren. And when I saw the Knights of Ren, I was like, hell yeah. There was one who looked like he was from Boba Fett and Jango Fett's universe. Like, he had kind of similar setup. There was one who looked like he was wielding a baseball bat. And I'm like, hell yeah, give me the baseball bat, son. I mean, there were, like, different variations, and it was, like, kind of, like, Kylo was, like, the Red Ranger of the Power Rangers kind of thing. And Kylo hasn't finished his training, and that's another reason why I love this film. Kylo was just the perfect little dude for this guy, for this film, because he was essentially what Anakin was, well, he would have been if those films were actually better. Oh, in episode 3, you can see that he is what his father was. He is temperamental. And I love how he takes his aggression out on everything around him. He's a no-nonsense kind of guy. And he's as much as he's painted as this kind of childish person with really bad daddy issues, he has strong ties to Darth Vader, and he exhibits really interesting traits that make him not only seem that he's just someone who's trying to follow his footsteps of his grandfather, he's also trying to surpass him. And there's moments in this film where you can see that sometimes he can be very calm and collected. He can also be very, very calculative about what he's going to do next. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then another thing is, who is Snoke? General Snoke, I think, was the title they gave him. This hologram that is always presented, the person who seduced Kylo to the dark side. I want to know who this guy is. I mean, I don't need to know in episode. I don't need to know in episode 8, but it would be great to know who Snoke is in the future. I mean, Snoke was pretty badass, I'm not going to lie. I really kind of like the kind of Emperor feel that they brought back. And then Maz Kanata. Maz Kanata was very interesting in this movie. She was essentially this movie's Yoda. And I wonder if she is actually a Jedi. Because why would she have Luke's lightsaber? Why would she know so much about the Force? Something doesn't add up. Something doesn't add up. And also, what caused FN2187 to defect? Is there something more to that? Or is it just like his conditioning didn't work? Maybe there's nothing to it. But I'd like to know. I'd like to know why he defected from the program. The Stormtrooper program. It'd be interesting to know. And for that, those are the things I'm looking forward to experiencing in episode 8 and 9. And I'm looking at the time. It's been 1 hour 11 minutes. I'm just thinking about like my cousin's internet and how he won't be able to listen to this podcast if I go on for much longer. So I'm going to leave it as that, right? I'm going to leave it with just how geeked up about this franchise that I'm really looking forward to. I may not really be looking forward to the standalone movies like the younger Han Solo. I'm like, I don't care about that. I'll probably watch it. No, most likely, definitely watch it. But again, I don't need to know the history of these people because that's what makes them fun and interesting. I don't need to know everything that makes them go. Unless it's like kind of like Borderlands pre-sequel where Handsome Jack, you kind of delved into his character and you could see that he's more of a... He starts off as an anti-hero and then he's slowly driven into being the villain of the franchise. Which is cool. So if they do that, I'm down. If they don't, probably not going to be that great anyway. Probably going to be an 8 out of 10. Which is actually pretty good, actually. If it's an 8 out of 10, that'd be amazing. 7 out of 10. Yeah, 7. Let's say 7. 6.5. I don't do 0.5s. Alright. It's going to be a 7. Wow. I am rambling. I haven't had anything to drink or eat. And I'm thirsty. My throat kind of hurts a little bit. I'm speaking a little more faster. And I'm not even sure if this is clear or you're even at this point of the podcast. So, yeah. Happy anniversary. It's been a year. It's been great. Till the next one. Bye. Oh, you're still here. Okay. So here's the thing. It's been rough. It's been a rough few kind of months. Things have been happening at home, and you know about this. This is your podcast, anyway. Things have been taking a turn for the worst. There's still hope. Here's to just hoping that things get better. If they don't, I think I'm mentally prepared for the outcome of if things don't, but the key is to stay strong, be positive, even though this might not be your year, statistically speaking, and also according to the Chinese zodiac, the year that is your birth year, in terms of cycle of the zodiac, is bad luck, but don't let that get you down. Just keep pushing forward. And for anyone out there who stayed back and listened to this last bit of this this podcast and listened to the entirety of it, listen to this section if you're in a situation where things are really bad, I'm here to tell you that things will get better. Time does heal all wounds, etc. except psychological scars left by your ex-girlfriend. Those don't heal. You can just put a bandage on those. Or boyfriend. I don't discriminate in any way, shape, or form. So yeah. Stay awesome. Be amazing. Do amazing. Be good. And till next time. Bye.